Today, I'm interviewing Dom
Hodgson,
founder of Little Warden. Little Warden is a site monitoring tool that has saved my butt many times, and I consider it one of my essential apps. Dom, welcome, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Very exciting.
So for those who were just listening, you know, at the very, very beginning, it almost sounded like my voice changed when I said your last name.
I didn't notice anything, mate.
Okay. All right. So I can share. Because it's almost as if I tried to introduce you multiple times and completely destroyed it.
the world will never know. That secret will go to my
grave. Yeah, I'm not even going to say it. I'm not even going to try to say it because they don't deserve it. The world doesn't deserve my version of your last name.
They can get that version on your OnlyFans.
Yeah, yes. No pants on saying your last name.
Well, this started out well, didn't it?
Oh. Sorry. It's too early. At least for me. Okay, fine. All right. Breathe, and we're back. Which, you know, I guess what a great thing to just go right into something I've been wanting to talk to you about for a really long time, which is not Little Warden yet. I want to talk to you about that. We're going to get to that. But before we're going to get to all the stuff I want to talk to you about on a personal level. And number one, the thing that fascinates me about you from afar, and I just think, man, I wonder what that's like. I wonder how amazing or absolutely horrible it is. And that is your pursuit of comedy and stand-up comedy. How's that going? And actually, let me reverse that. It's not going because you can't be in front of human beings right now. But how was that going? And what got you to do that? And you know, tell me more about your stand-up comedy.
So, yes, it's not going very well at the moment. I don't know if you know this, but there's a slight pandemic, which means there's no live comedy at all. The way it started was a few years ago, I was doing a lot of conference talks, and I wanted to get better at it. And the way that I thought I'd get better is just to try and get funnier, because that's my shtick. I don't know anything, but I find myself quite funny, and sometimes audiences do too. So I went on a local course here about comedy writing, and the idea was how to get the joke in a smaller time frame as possible. Because if I go on stage at Brighton SEO, I've got 45 minutes to make the audience laugh. If I go on stage at a comedy club, I've got 5 minutes. So you've got to go, right, what is the basic elements of this premise that I need to get the laugh? And that's what we were focusing on. And the audience is so different. Like at Brighton or any other conference, like I can have them laughing very, very quickly because they're not expecting you to be funny.
And they're already drunk. They're already drunk because it's Brighton.
Yeah. But if I go on stage at a comedy club like the Frog and Bucket, they are not only are they drunk, they're expecting you to be funny. So they come on with guarded anticipation, and it's almost like a competition. Go on then, make me laugh. And so it's a completely different thing, but it really does train you. And then I joined an improv group and learned a lot more about letting go and trusting myself. And we did gigs all around the country. We did a lot of fun with that. And yeah, obviously with the pandemic and everything like that, we've done a few Zoom things, but I actually said, you know, I left the improv group recently because I didn't miss that part of it. I felt like I'd achieved all I wanted to achieve out of comedy. Because if you, as you know, with the levels of comedy, it's, you know, you start going around doing gigs and then you get paid for some. And then there's a huge leap before you get very good paying gigs and then get on TV and you need an agent and all that. And I never wanted that. I always wanted it as just a bit of fun. And I wanted to learn and understand the craft and things like that. So when it felt like, all right, the next step is you need to put more effort into this, then it actually became more of a time sink to doing some of my other hobbies and some of the other stuff that I do. So, but I really do appreciate everything I got out of that.
So you said that you've had a pretty tough audience. And so I'm interested in hearing first what's a joke that you remember telling that just absolutely bombed, and it was just sort of like you wish you had a bag over your head and could walk out, you know, and nobody know who you are. And then after that, redeem yourself with the joke that you did on stage that just killed it. And I'm hoping that both of these are you know, podcast friendly.
Oh yeah. So what I do is I tell stories about like my life and stuff like that. So the harshest lesson that I learned was the order of the jokes that you tell. And you think it's obvious now, but the audience, before you can tell something which is, I wouldn't say risque, but a little bit that you need to have a few jokes. So when Scarlett was born, she was six, she was like 5 weeks premature, which was a surprise, but she was tiny, absolutely tiny. And
Scarlett is your daughter, for people who don't know who Scarlett is. Scarlett is your daughter.
Apologies, yes. And like I take her out for walks in the pram, and just women would just surround me, like, because she was a tiny baby. It was, and like I made the comment that it was like a bat signal for ovaries. And if you were single, like, this would be a great way of picking up women. And I sort of made the joke about, you know, taking off the wedding ring and going, ah, sadly, it's just us two now and all that. And when I did that in the middle of the set, it worked so well. I got laughs. I got so much. But I opened at a club with it, and it was just deafening silence, apart from three comedians at the back who knew my set, who knew that that wasn't the reaction I intended on getting.
I'm sure they were laughing because you were bombing. But there's got to be an enjoyment in that.
Yes, that you get a lot of enjoyment, especially because when you do the scene and when you tour, you end up with the same, like, maybe 10 people, and you know each other's sets off by heart. So when you're always listening for, oh, that didn't hit right, or oh, what did you change there, or what has she done? So when that bombed, they were in stitches.
So what did you do? I mean, like, what went through your mind, and how did you recover, if you recovered?
I mean, you've just got to carry on. And what that audience wanted, they were a comedy club audience, and what they wanted was sex jokes. And that's not sort of my shtick, but I sort of transitioned towards what they wanted. You're up there, and there's nobody there to help you. And there's an adrenaline rush there that, you know, you are flying literally by the seat of your pants to try and make this audience laugh.
All right. That's good. I'm glad you were able to recover and you just keep moving. And so then what is your best, which is going to be, so here's the thing is, I've set you up for failure because you just described how you can't really tell a good joke until you've kind of built up to it. Otherwise there's no context. It's just unfunny, you know, where, you know, people are staring at you. So I have a feeling that if you tell this one, I'm not going to laugh. The people listening aren't going to laugh because you haven't built it up. So I'm giving you permission to say it, and then we'll find out if it works or not.
And also there is, I mean, number one, I haven't done my set in over a year now. Do you know the reason why comedians introduce themselves?
Remind themselves who they are? I don't know.
Because the worst thing that you can have as an intro is, oh, please welcome to the stage the funniest guy you will ever meet. He is amazing. He has made me laugh. He will have you laughing in the first 6 minutes. Like, you know, that is because the audience instantly there set expectations. What you want is, and here's Dom Hodgson coming to the stage. You want something completely low brow, just get on stage and just do it. So introducing, what's your funniest joke, is definitely setting up a bar. Well, I, do you know what? I'm just looking through my notes, because the thing is, a lot of my jokes are UK based. So my funniest bit is about Greggs, and you've no idea what Greggs is.
No, I worked with Greggs before, but I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, so let me just read this one. So you know you can now buy scales that connect to Twitter. So I saw that last year, and I thought that was a great idea. The only way I'm going to lose some weight is to involve the general public and have a bit of public shaming. So I bought one, hooked it up, and sent it to its own Twitter account. I'm pretty sure the public shaming began. Almost instantly, people started to retweet whenever I put a bit of weight, and there was a guessing game as to what I ate the previous night. But worse than that is that this Twitter account, to my scales, and at this point there was a true story, has more followers than my actual Twitter account. Oh, how's Dom doing these days? I don't know, but he wears 19 stone 10 and gained 2 pounds last night, which is getting cheeky Nando's.
See, that's still funny.
It is good. It is, yeah. Yes.
And I didn't know you could connect a scale to Twitter. So this is like, that's an educational joke right there. That's not just it funny. That's like, I learned something. And also now all I'm thinking about is I want to go find that Twitter account because I didn't know you had that. And so I don't know. There you go.
Let's just say during the lockdown, it's slightly been deactivated.
You're like, no, I don't think so. That's funny. All right. Well, that's all I have on the comedy thing. I just think that's really fascinating. I think it's really interesting as far as, you know, you saying why you kind of pursued it. I think it's always kind of different for different people. It's interesting that you did it so that you could do better on the conference circuit, which we don't have right now. It doesn't exist anymore at the moment. So you can't do either. It's like a double insult, you know. I mean, like, I can't pursue this and I can't pursue the other thing, which is the reason why I was pursuing the comedy.
That's why we have other hobbies.
Yep, that makes sense. You do another thing that I think, you know, anybody who's ever heard of you or follows what you do, that is pretty interesting, I think. And that is, you dress up in some different costume every time of some animal or something or whatever. And then you run half marathons, which is, you know, it's a little weird. It's a little crazy. But you do it for a good cause. And so tell me, why do you do that? How did you get into doing that? Where do you find these suits? What is going on here?
All right. So, I mean, first of all, I'm just going to correct you. I don't run half marathons. There's a lot of walking involved. You'll find that all my terminology says I do half marathons. I don't. There's hardly any running. And this all started sort of about 7 years ago that I was volunteering for, in fact, longer than that. I was volunteering for a children's charity. And I said, look, I need to do some of the stuff. I'm moving. So they said, oh, just to let you know, we've entered you into the Great North Run. The Great North Run is the world's biggest half marathon. It has about 60,000 people that do it. And people train for a year to do this. And it was in September, and they entered me in, I think, April. And also, this was the year after three people died doing it. So I panicked and da-da-da-da-da, but I did it. And I hate running. I will tell you this for now. There's a lot of people that say that, oh, you know, you will find your love of running. I have literally done over 60 half marathons at this point, like over 110Ks, and I still hate running. I've never enjoyed
love.
It.
You found no love in it.
No, not at all. But the crowds are what I love, and the audience what I love, and that's why I said, right, I'm going to do the half marathons for charity, but I'm never going to do them not in costume, because one of the things that I try and do in my life is I try and bring joy. I try and create laughter. I try and bring happiness, and that sort of goes back to the comedy, sort of goes to, I'm sure we'll talk about the Christmas lights and stuff like that and other projects that we do. The joy that putting on a stupid costume and videoing it and looking in pain brings, as well as cash, because the thing is that when you raise money, everybody's doing a 5K now, everybody's doing a 10K. And to me, that never felt, and it sounds wrong, it never felt special. It never felt unique. My mantra with fundraising and raising money for charity has always been, you've got to do something that A, pushes your boundaries, and B, you don't enjoy. So I don't support people who are doing like a sponsored skydive, really, because a skydive that feels more for you than anything else, if you get what I mean.
Right. There's not enough pain in it, is what you're saying. You might be scared for a little bit, but it's really just a pretty, you know, picture if you're filming it. And there's where's the pain in it? Right? Where's the pain? Where's the embarrassment of wearing my tiger suit and looking like I'm about to die?
I did the Las Vegas half marathon in an Elvis costume with I think about 700 LEDs, and honestly that was horrible, but we did it, but just the laughs and the joy that we brought was just amazing, and we raised a lot of money during it. We've just finished. I'm actually taking a year off running at least now, mainly because there are no races. but also this goes back to the mantra of I don't think you can do the same thing each time and ask the same people. So the first year, I think I did one or two half marathons. The second year, I did five. And then it just kept going on. And last year, I did 26. And that, to me, was about the limit that I could do time-wise. So I was like, right, okay, I need a year off. I had the idea was everything was going to end in the Disney World Marathon, which was meant to be about 6 days ago. But obviously, that's all cancelled. So we are booked in for next year if it happens.
Yeah, I think they're actually giving shots there right now. I don't think there's any running. I think they're just giving the vaccine in mass.
But that's at the mile marker six. So you've got to make it to 6 miles and then you can get your vaccine. And then you make it to 13 miles and you get the second shot. And then, you know, that's how they're getting it in America.
That's actually pretty good. I mean, I feel like you might get more sick from it. But yeah, that sounds good. I like that.
So yeah, we've just passed raising £50,000, which has been an incredible goal for the charity and what I want. But it's time to give it a break and just... Because I don't want to get to the point where it's just like, oh, Dom's doing another stupid thing, and I want them to. I've got some ideas for next year, and they take a bit of time to work with.
So we're gonna see this evolve, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I think we're gonna see the end of running, but we're definitely not gonna see the end of stupid physical attempts to do something.
Thank goodness, because that's what we need. I mean, we do. I mean, I most of the time. I'll get on Twitter and that's where I'll see the live stream and I'll be like, oh, there's Dom doing his thing in his new outfit and interesting lighting.
Yeah. I mean, well, the thing is that because I did these all on my treadmill at home, and anybody that's watching, you go to www.rundom.run and you will see a picture of every single run and every single costume. Some of them were handmade. I've got a friend who makes costumes for me. A lot of them were off the shelf, but one of the things you're going to remember is I'm quite a big guy. So getting costumes that are unique and not stag do type costumes is a bit more difficult than you'd think.
Where do you get them? I mean, just anywhere you can?
Anywhere, any possible place that I can. We actually had a local costume shop that was about 5 minutes from my house, and a week after I did my last run, they closed down. And I'm not saying I was holding them up, but I bought a lot of my costumes from them.
That's funny. Yeah, they're like, oh man, Tom's not running right now, or walking, or whatever the hell you want to call it. You're not moving for half a marathon. So one of the things that comes to mind when I watch you do that is, because I've run a half marathon before, even a marathon, which almost killed me. And I couldn't ever imagine wearing anything over me. Like when I watch you in those outfits, I just think if that were me, there would be flames coming off, because I would be so hot. So how do you manage, not overheating and just falling over and dying?
Not very well. I'm just used to it. Like, I've always run in stupid costumes. Like, I've always run in several layers. And I remember doing the Disney half marathon in Florida, and that was 31 degrees or something. And I did that in my Wreck-It Ralph, and that's the warmest I've ever been. But you just sort of get used to it. And at home, I had two fans pointed towards me when they were. And it does get warm. But for me, that's part of the running. Like the I know that I will always finish a half marathon because I'm not timed. Like my times for a half marathon were terrible and they didn't get any better because I didn't train. I didn't go for it because that's not what I was about.
Right. It's the best way to approach it for sure. Is don't train. just show up in a hot suit.
Yeah, literally that's what we did. And the worst thing I've had with a costume, and it's one of my favorite costumes, is you've been to Disneyland. Before they had the Max Pass, they had the Fast Pass, which was the card that you got, which allowed you to skip the queue at a certain time. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Well, in Disneyland Paris, they still use that. And Disneyland Paris do a half marathon. And so what I did was I got a dress made out of Fast Passes. So we designed the Fast Pass. We got it printed into laminated business cards just in case it rained. So we'd be fine. And we sewed, one of my friends who I paid, sewed it onto a dress for me with a hoop and everything like that. And then she made me like a tiara and everything like that. It looked fantastic. It was one of my favorite costumes. And then on my back, I had a bag with 2,000 fast passes that we gave out to other runners and people that were stuck. And it was a fully customized fast pass to the end of the line in English and French. I was so proud of it. But the issue was, is that I don't know if you know this, but some dresses have hoops on the bottom, which keep them from trailing. And my hoop,
I didn't know. I mean, I guess I should know, but I didn't know.
You should know, mate. But my hoop fell off in the first mile. And so what that left was about 40 strands of cardboard on a string rubbing against my legs for another 12 miles. So by the end of it, some of my legs were like bleeding because of the cards. And also it rained a little bit, so some of them were deteriorating. But I just sat on the bus on the way home and I'm like, oh, what's that? I was like, oh, it's my legs. Oh, let's just get home.
But and the person sitting next to you is just like, what is going on next to me?
That's my favorite thing is because we mostly stay off site at Paris and you have to get on the normal bus. And there's people there that have just arrived for their Disneyland Paris. And then they see this bloke dressed up as Tinkerbell or in a dress made out of fat.
He's bleeding.
And you're like, bonjour.
And you're like, you wouldn't believe the chafe I have.
it's worth it just for that.
Oh, that's good stuff. What is your obsession with Disney? Because you know you're obsessed with it. I mean, like, where does this come from? What's the love? Where's the love come from? Why is it that you know your family goes there all the time and you dress up as and princess outfits.
All right. I will say that I only dress up as princess outfits during running. It's not like a casual Saturday thing.
Hey, no judgment. There's no judgment here, right? You do you. You do your thing.
Yeah, there's a few elements there, but I think the main thing is when we went to Disney World, there's an atmosphere there of joy, because most people when they go to Disney World, it is either a once-in-a-lifetime thing or they've saved money, like for 5 years to take the whole family for a big family reunion, or it's their honeymoon. And there's this concept of, like, don't sweat the sort of small stuff. Like, we're all there to have a singularly good time. We want to make the best of it because we've spent so much money and we've looked forward to this. So you're walking down Main Street and you bump into somebody by accident. It's like, oh, don't worry about it, you know. People want to help you. You know, there's just this joy, and that's the feeling, and that has changed recently, I won't lie. But there's that joy that we have that every time we go, we get a little bit of that.
It's kind of the fantasy of it, the idea that everybody's kind of there for the same reason, and the way that Disney runs their parks. Everybody kind of gets to experience something that is similar and also expected.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, it's escapism. There's a bubble there, but isn't that what holidays are all about?
Yeah. I'm not complaining about it. I mean, I'm just describing what it sounds like you're saying you like about it.
And that's what I say to people, but also there's a community there. I've met some of my good friends there and things like that. And you know, we have other hobbies outside of Disney and things like that. But it's one of the things that we love. And don't get me wrong, just because I'm not a, I don't think that everything they do is great. I think some of the things that they've done recently have been moronic, and that's from a fan and a shareholder point of view. But you know, Wall Street doesn't listen to me because their share price is currently the highest it's ever been. So
I don't follow Disney close enough to know whatever it is they've done that has made a diehard fan question their Disney religion.
Oh, let's not get onto that. This is a fun, cheery podcast.
Before we move on to talking about Little Warden, which I really can't wait to talk about because I absolutely love it. What's up with the Christmas lights? Because if for anybody who has ever seen your Christmas lights, it's significant. I mean, it looks like it is connected to some sort of AI that is making it do all kinds of amazing things. It's just kind of pretty amazing, really.
Yeah. I'm sure many of you have seen the videos online of like the people's houses that sing to like the Christmas lights and stuff like that. There's a very famous like chop suey one and things. And so I'm the sort of person that looks at that and goes, oh, I'd like to do that. I wonder how hard it is. And then you look and you think, oh, actually, that's quite hard. So I bought some of the stuff a few years ago and then I didn't really get a chance. And with lockdown, I thought, do you know what? Let's do it. So let's do it properly. So we actually started some of it every year. We do a little bit of the house, but we started to do it big last year. And it's a weird hobby because it's sort of like four or five hobbies in one. So you put all the lights on your house, but then you have to program all of the effects. So everything that you see on the house is all individually programmed and sequenced. So all down to the mouth movements and with the singing of the song, you have to sit there and go through each of the mouth movements of the song and go what mimic the mouth movements manually, or you can buy something or somebody else has done. But yeah, so we have about, and to your American audience, this is nothing because your house is the size of streets.
Some of them are. All of them aren't that big.
Hey, look, I watch TV. I know what they're all like. But we've got a really good community here. And again, and that's what I love about it. I love the community. I love being a part of a good community. And so, yeah, it synchronizes to music. So when we play a song, the lights will go and we use something, but the term for them is pixels. So they are WS11 lights that are all programmable and they can be any color you want for any time. And yeah, they all go off. It looks good. And you can see that on the Hodgson Lights website. There should be a nice video.
Sweet. I'll make sure I include a link and, you know, I'll probably steal an image or a video and put it on my site and won't ask permission or anything like that. So just so people can see. In fact, I'll save them the click.
just put John's Christmas lights and just replace the
whole right. Exactly. That's what it is. I'm going to actually just take it over and just say it's mine with the least amount of work possible. That is the way of the internet. That's certainly the way of people we've known in the industry. So like, oh, does he do that? No, he stole that. So Little Warden is one of my very favorite apps. It's probably one of my favorite apps, partly because a lot of the things that you're doing they're things that I wanted to build like years ago and just never did, you know, or couldn't or whatever. And then you built it and it's just like, man, this is so good. But it's not simply that it does what it does. I think it's the reason why I love it the most is because it saves my butt. It saved it so many times. And an example of that is when you're in charge of a site. I'm just going to be really vague here because I have to be. You're in charge of a big site and maybe there's a lot of people, who, you know, developers who work on that site, and somebody does something that completely hoses your robots.txt file, or, you know, there's like any number of things, believe me, that, and I'm sure you know, actually, that you can do to completely screw up your SEO. And so what is absolutely beautiful about Little Warden is that it is just like on top of it. Here's this, it's you know, I think you call it Robot Dom, you know, here's Robot Dom just out there in the background, always watching, at least it feels that way, who sends me that alert, you know, pretty quickly after something happens and it detects it. That's like, oh my God, like I gotta get in the horde and tell these people to undo. I'm using good language, but as opposed to the language I want to use, but undo the thing that they did.
That's exactly why we built it. Because did you ever hear the origin story of Little Warden?
No, and I would love to hear it now. It seems like right now is a great time for that.
It does, yeah. So I used to run a hack day, or a hackathon, as you Americans call it, in Leeds, called Leeds Hack. And one day I woke up and I was like, oh, why is the website full of Chinese characters? I was like, oh, I don't remember doing that. So I went to log in and I was like, oh, because it's not my website anymore, because it had expired and I missed it. And so I was like, oh, God. So I registered the .net and then we moved on, and then somebody has bought the .com and tries to sell it back to me all the time now. But in my little, I've got a little book of startup ideas. I was like, right, we need to sort this out because this happens to me. I know it happened to an agency that I worked for a few times with clients. And I was like, there's a market here to do something. And I left it for a few years, like you do, because everybody has this idea and everybody has, oh, we could do that. And then we actually took a Disney cruise, me and my wife and my daughter. And we picked a cruise because my wife said, right, you need a break. You are doing too many things. You need to stop. So we're going to take a cruise. And we took a transatlantic cruise from Orlando to Europe. It was 15 nights. And I had no internet because the internet on the cruise, I think it was something like $100 for 10 meg or something stupid like that.
What, was it a Disney cruise?
Of course it was a Disney cruise. All right? So... So let me tell the story. Who's telling the story?
I'm sorry. Right. I just had to like, yeah. No, it was in, I had to, it helps me picture the story. What's happening. Go ahead.
So the thing is that Scarlett was 1.5 at that point. So she'd be in bed by 8 o'clock. So, you know, obviously we wouldn't leave her on her own. So we're there, we're lying in bed, and you do what every married couple does. You get your laptop out. And I was like, I played a few games and I was like bored. And I was like, do you know what? I'm just going to work on something. And then I started playing with Little Warden, because obviously you're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean with no internet access. The best thing to try and build is a website crawler.
Right. Something that monitors constantly over the internet without any internet at the time. Yes.
And the thing with Heather is the smartest person I know in the world. So she's got a PhD in maths. She's a much better programmer than me, but she also doesn't like the way I program. So I was working on it and I was like, can we do this? What do we do that? And then after about 3 days, she was like, just give it here. Right, we're going to build it, and then you can just market it and you can come up with the features and I'll just build it. and thus, I wasn't allowed to do any more features for Little Warden. But we built it, and we built the first version in about 3 months. And it was purely, the initial version was, you paste all your domain names, it checks your whois, your SSL for domain expiration and SSL expiration. It works with subdomains as well, and it checks the response code of your homepage. And then once we launched, we started adding more and more features, and it just evolved.
Yeah, it's I've, you know, watched it evolve since the beginning, and it's interesting that it came from, as most I think apps and ideas do, it came from a sort of a instance or experience that you had where you're like, man, I really wish this existed, so this hadn't have happened to me, or because I need to get this particular thing done. And so it, you know, it sounds like that obviously was one of the main features was to monitor the expiration date of your domain, but also just other things that made sense. Like you said, as far as monitoring the site and making sure it's up. And then as is a normal thing in our industry, everybody has that thing they wish the app did. So I'm assuming you actually kind of got a torrent of feature requests.
We have so many feature requests, and what we've tried to do with Warden is stay in our lane a little bit, is be quite a strict sort of tool that we do one thing, but we do it very, very well. So we don't go off, we don't do uptime checking. So we don't check your website every minute, because to be honest, that's not what we're going to get into do. That's a race. There's too many apps that already do that, and they're already too cheap. We couldn't compete in that area, because we have to think that there's only a team of two of us. And if our uptime checking goes off at 3 o'clock in the morning, one of us is going to have to get up. We struggle a lot to have a holiday as it is, to have something that checks every minute whether our service is up. God, that's not going to be good. We also don't check the whole website. We check specific URLs for the very reason that some of the big sites have over 10,000 pages that they're checking. But they're checking them for specific things. We don't just do a whole round robin, so we don't inundate you every day with new notifications, so you get overload. But yeah, there are lots and lots of features. I can tell you the next feature that we haven't announced yet, and if anybody makes it this far into the podcast,
right. That's exactly. They're like, here's your prize. Get ready. Here's your prize right now. 3, 2, 1.
We are adding the page speed and the web core vitals directly into it. So,
oh wow, nice. Start. Are you using the? I think there's like a code repository on GitHub that they release, you know, where you can actually put it on your own site. Are you using that code base or something different?
We are testing at the moment. I believe we might be using Lighthouse, which is what most people use, which I believe is the one that you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what it is. I mean, I know it's Lighthouse, you know, technically. I don't remember the name of that GitHub repository, but I'll find it.
That's what I think we'll be using. And, you know, the thing that we've tried to maintain with Warden is, like, we never put the prices up for customers who are already customers. So we've added tons of new features, and we have put the price up a few times, but the price you pay is the price that you sign up at. So it doesn't matter what we add, you'll never pay more. And it's quite funny, because one of our first customers currently pays us about £3 a month, because she was the first customer to sign up, but I hadn't fixed the billing was wrong. I hadn't fixed it yet, but she'd found the website and she managed to sign up. And I was like, and she's like, oh, you can refund me if I want. I was like, no, you know what? You were willing to give us the money. You were willing to take a risk on us. It's our fault that we billed you the wrong thing. You go for it. And so she's got a fairly decent account for that amount, but
you know, I appreciate that. I have a very similar attitude towards that. Because I like it both as a consumer, and somebody, you know, who has had some experience in the past, you know, with an app. Because like when I was in control of my past SaaS, that was a rule that we had, was we would grandfather everybody in that. They don't do that anymore now I'm gone, but that's sort of even the approach I've taken with CoyWolf and like the membership, is I pretty much have said, if you know, whatever it is you sign up for today is what you'll pay forever. And you know, there's things that I'm planning I want to do. There's even an app I'm unbelievably slowly building, but that's, I've told everybody who's there that it's, the price isn't going to increase. Whatever it ends up, I end up building. I'm so thankful that you actually even gave me the time of day and gave me any money for what's coming out of my mind. that you know, it'll always be that set price. So I appreciate that, and I think that your customers probably, you know, really appreciate that. I did want to ask you real quick about the feature that's coming out, which is, how's that going to work? So for example, if you're monitoring the core web vitals, and just, you know, general page experience performance, what's the alert going to be? Is it going to be that it changes, or, you know, in other words, is it going to be that you're just going to keep telling them that, you have 100 pages that completely suck, or is it going to be that, this page changed to good or bad or warning?
So now you come into the reason why we haven't launched the feature yet. Aha. And this is one of the main issues that we have with Warden, and we're actually going through a backend UI push at the moment, because we have a lot of advanced functionality that people miss out on. So, like, let's say title type changes, you can get alerted for the title type change, which is what most people do, but they get alerted for any title type change. But actually, with our system, you can customize it and say, I only want to be alerted if it doesn't contain the word X, if it contains a word, if it contains a number that is above or below this. So you can go much more granular. You can even put a regular expression in there. And so we're trying to make that approach more viable for people, so they can see, do you know what? Like, you're not inundated. So with the Web Core Vitals, you will be able to say, alert me if it changes a bound, or alert me if it increases by a percentage of X.
Right. So you get the option. That's nice.
Okay. Yes. But it's about making those options easy to use for people. And that's one of the things that, to be honest, we struggle with.
It's difficult. I mean, it's never easy to make something simple. I mean, it's always, you look at the spectrum, which is, you figure it out, which is on one side. Like, yes, it technically does it, but you need to know how to almost code to, I'm going to make the decision for you. I mean, that to me is the other end of the spectrum. And that was something that, you know, when I was at Raven, that was always the struggle. And it's funny because looking back, I made plenty of mistakes, but one of the mistakes I made was I had it in my head that we were for advanced SEO. You know, we weren't for newbies or whatever. And we didn't want to make decisions for people because of that. And to me, that was a mistake. Like, if I were to do something all over again, whatever it might be, I would approach it from, this is going to be able to handle almost everybody on the front end. And then maybe we'll offer some more advanced things. But you have to like look for it or want it or need it. But in on the front end, it's going to be magical. It's going to make some decisions for you. But for people who actually know a little more or need to do a little more, they can click on this thing that will allow them to change the settings, that type of thing. That's how I would do it over. It's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right. We have such a wide breadth of users. We've got some users which will literally go into every single feature, try it out. And we've got some users which will paste all of their client domains and never log in again.
But they get the alerts. I mean, like I'm one of those people who I'm on the latter end, you know, where I come in, throw in all the domains, and don't log in hardly ever because I don't need to, because the alert system's so good. I mean, I even get, you know, I get alerts in Slack because you have Slack integration. I mean, like, it's awesome. And so a lot of the times either it's a good to know, I don't need to take any action. And other times it's like, oh my goodness. And in fact, even with your alerts, I'll go back to the robots.txt example, you provide a diff. And so I don't need to log in. That's why in case you're wondering, like, why don't my paying users log in? It's because you're giving them everything they need in the email alert or the Slack alert or whatever. And so,
oh no, we're aware of that. And like, because that's what we say to people is that it's a lot of it is fire and forget. As long as you are coming in and adding your new sites or your new clients as you launch them or get them or sign them, then what you shouldn't have to log into Warden every day unless something goes wrong. But I just want to make sure that my ideal thing is that for every client, that all of their sites are green, and because that means that if anything goes yellow or red, that means that there's something wrong that either they have to fix or we've got wrong. And that's my aim. Is like, I don't care if everything's green and you don't log on for half a year, but you're looking at any alerts, then I'm happy.
Yeah, I would say, I think I said sort of on the front end of our conversation today that it's one of my essential apps because it's almost like insurance a little bit, but it's just peace of mind, really. And this is, you know, for those listening, this is not me trying to sell Little Warden to you on Dom's behalf or whatever. This is literally an app I'm passionate about because it saved my butt. And so that's why, you know, I'm talking about it like this. I mean, it's an app I really like and it's incredibly useful and it's affordable and I use it for every single, you know, site that I run. So it's just,
I have given John absolutely no money whatsoever.
Not yet. Actually, this is all about leverage. Be like, I'm just not going to publish this until I get my check. Oh my goodness. Let's sort of transition a little bit into, you know, what it's like running a small business and an app and even what that's been like through just the pandemic and stuff. There are people who are listening who are either, you know, interested in starting something, who have something and they've had their own struggles or whatever. And so I think this would be of interest to them. You know, what's it been like? I would say even before the pandemic, what's it been like just being a truly just a small business and really for you, I think a business of two, because Heather, you know, is your partner in this and it sounds like is also the brains of it.
I have never denied that. And I feel guilty every time somebody tweets, oh, Dom's launched this. Oh, Dom's amazing app. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. We're incredibly lucky in the fact that I have an amazing wife that is willing to work with me on my stupid ideas and that we can work together. So, you know, that's what we do. We work on our projects together. We tend to outsource. The only thing we tend to outsource really is design work because we're both not very good at that. But for the most part, we're very self-sufficient in what we do. And so it has been, since we launched Warden, it's been sort of a whirlwind. It was originally launched as like a backup, and now it's become like the main income. And I'm pleased with it. Before March last year, we had month-on-month growth every month. But we're not talking hockey stick growth. We're not talking VC investment growth. We're talking sometimes that growth was maybe £10 a month. You know, it was very slow partly because my marketing wasn't right and I was never happy with one of the, for instance, just on a tangent, we launched free trials yesterday and it has taken us, 3 years to launch free trials. And that's because I've always in my head gone, oh, but we'll only get one chance with someone who signs up for a free trial. So we want to make sure that it's the best. So if we just launch this feature or we just make this change and then you launch it, and you're like, oh, if we just had this bit. And then before you know it, it's 3 years later.
I know that feeling. I know that feeling well.
Yeah. And Little Warden it means so much to all of us. Like, I'm not joking. When we get a sign up, I'm so proud. I'm so pleased. And I get upset when we get a cancellation. And Heather will tell you that when we get a bug report, it almost gives me physical pain because I'm like, I feel like I'm letting the customers down and my baby's not working. And I'm like, can we fix it? Can we fix it? And she gets so annoyed with me. But that's the nature of what we do. But we love it. We wouldn't have it any other way. Trust me, I've given her several opt-outs. You can get a real job if you want, darling. I won't judge it. That's fine. But from March last year, obviously, in the UK, we had a lockdown in March. We call it lockdown number one now. And I thought in my head, with a bit of ego, that we'd be fine because that the entire premise for Little Warden was we're going to be there watching your stuff while your staff aren't. So with your staff on furlough, at least somebody's monitoring all your client sites and all your sites for that. And then even if they're just furloughed and can only work 20% of the time, somebody can just log in and either renew a domain name or just look at an issue or read that email. And we lost a lot of customers in that first 2 weeks, like a significant portion. And I didn't take it too well. I couldn't understand it, and it took me a while to sort of like realize that actually all of our clients had lost all of their clients because the first thing they do is cancel all the marketing spend and things like that. And it took me a while not to take it sort of personally that we'd let ourselves down with it, that we'd done something wrong. There's pretty much nothing we could have done to fix that.
Yeah, it's not like, I mean, Little Warden is not hugely expensive, but it does sound more like what you described, which is the very, very unfortunate experience for many of our friends, you know, who have agencies and stuff like that, where they just, the spend went away. The business went away. The clients had to stop everything. I mean, it was just so devastating, even just for the clients, that it devastated the agencies, which then, you know, goes down the line and causes them to have to just, you know, pull back and stop paying for everything they were using for their clients.
Yeah. And that's sort of what happened. And so very quickly I said, okay, I tell you what, anybody that is canceling for COVID reasons, we're just going to give them 6 months free. Try and let them ride the storm out, and we'll not be a bother to them. And that wasn't 6 months free. We'll start billing you at the end of it. It was like, right, your account's cancelled, but if you want to use it, there's another 6 months. You can use that. That's fine. And a lot of them appreciated that. Some of them was heartbreaking. We had a travel company in South Africa that their team were using us a lot because they had a lot of little sites. And they said, look, we're probably not going to have a job next week, so but thank you for your offer. And then that sort of puts it into perspective that actually, do you know what? It's a lot worse for people that you've got to think about that. Then a lot of our friends started losing jobs and agencies started to downsize. So I don't know if you saw, we launched the Search Starter Pack, where I'm quite lucky in the fact that I have quite a few friends in the industry that also have SaaS and also have businesses. So I emailed them and said, right, what can we give people that are either starting up themselves because they've just lost their job or like need a hand? So I think I got about 15 different people and people to give like a data studio course, 6 month accounts, some free stickers. The website's still up on searchstartup.com. And we just said, right, just put your name in there and we'll send you an account. And we had over 200 people sign up for that. So, and again, there was no money in it. It was effort, but we just wanted to make sure that people just had a little bit of. We have an unofficial thing in Little Warden that we've never really spoke about, that whenever we see somebody go freelance, we give them a Little Warden account for like a year, and we just say, here, do you know what? You've got a lot on your plate. If we can help at all, use this. You know, and again, it's not a sly way of trying to get them to give the business, because we don't ask for their credit card, and you know, 9 times out of 10 they don't renew. But I'm just giving them the option of just saying, look, if we can just take a little bit of your mind so you can concentrate on the business, you do that.
I think that's just good. I think that's good marketing. I mean, I think that's good being, you know, keeping an awareness of sort of your target market, making that connection and giving them something without really any true expectation of them returning it, you know?
I am certainly not upset when they don't, but I'm a big believer in karma. So I'm a big believer in, you know, you do good things and good things will happen. And in my life, a lot of good things have happened. I can't deny that at all. So back into the story. Yeah. Last year was tough for a lot of people, and it was tough for me. And a lot of people think it's about the holidays, because as you mentioned earlier, we go on a lot of holidays, mostly to Disney. And in 2018, we decided, I'll tell you what, the one thing we've never done is we've never been to every Disney park in the world. So let's do it, but let's do it all in a year. So in a year, we were going to go to every single Disney park in the world. So the ones we hadn't been to were Shanghai, Hong Kong, and Tokyo. So in 2018, we booked and paid, we were going, and we were going to go on May the 4th, 2020. You can probably guess we didn't get to go. I feel like I was one of the only people to have to cancel a Disney holiday in every single Disney park last year. But the funny thing is that didn't upset me. That wasn't what was getting me down. It was work. And it was the lockdown number one was okay, because it was manageable because it was the summer. We had Scala. It was like an extended 6 week holiday. We did a lot of stuff together. We could go out for walks and things like that. But it felt a lot like, she also wasn't doing that much school because she was in nursery at the time, but it felt a lot like we would do it. We Heather and I would take it in turns. So one of us had an hour, have an hour or two with Scarlett to play and to entertain. The other one would get some work done. And then you'd swap, you'd have lunch, and then you'd swap again. So you do it in a couple of shifts. But it meant that any time that we wanted to do something together, like discuss a feature or discuss an issue, we either had to do it at night or over Slack. And don't get me wrong, we talk a lot over Slack, even though we're in the same room, just because it's easier to remember stuff.
That's pretty funny. I like that.
It was hard, but it was bearable. The two of the lockdowns that we had, the one in November and the one right now, are a lot harder because, it's raining a lot. You can't really go outside. And Scarlett has schoolwork now, so we have to concentrate on that. You can't. So, yeah, it was. I posted a blog post a few days ago, and normally the company blogs are all just like marketing crap and all happy yappy. But I was like, right, I'm gonna tell you about that it was actually hard. My job really rewarding is to manage the features, talk about the marketing, do some of the marketing, do all of that, but also design all the interfaces, design which button goes where, what does what, how does this work. And there was a bit of functionality that I couldn't get working in my head. And normally something like that would take me a day, but because of the lockdown and everything like that, it was months. I just couldn't get it. And the situation was just, just increasing with everything like that. And it just wasn't a good time. And it took me a while to sort of get into it. And I sort of feel a little bit out of love with Little Warden. I couldn't dedicate because it just felt like there was no future with it. Like, I couldn't fix this. So what am I bringing to the table if I can't do the one job that I'm doing? Because when you own a business, there are so many different hats to wear, and there's so many different things that you can focus on. So even with marketing, what do you focus on? Do you focus on outreach? Do you focus on sales? Do you write a blog post? Do you do this? And I found myself doing little bits of each thing, but not concentrating on one. And obviously that wasn't having enough effect. So about that time, we got approached by two companies who were interested in buying Little Warden. And I sat down with Heather and I said, look, it might be the time. We can have a fresh start. We can do something. We could pay off the mortgage. We could do X, Y, Z. And so we considered it. And then we just said, well, do you know what? If we sold Little Warden, yeah, we'd have a bit of a cash. We'd pay off the mortgage. We'd maybe travel for a few years. We might actually get to the other Disney parks. But then what would we do? We'd start another business and we'd start again and we'd build up a Little Warden. So it just felt like it just didn't seem worth it because we'd already built something that we consider quite special. And that sort of made me sit down and realize that, you know what, I need to work this out. And we fixed that issue. We had a good chat, Heather and I, and we came on with like a marketing plan and what the issues were and what could we do. And we agreed to outsource some of the bits that were a little bit beyond me at the time. And, we've been doing that to great success. We've knocked out three or four different features since we've had that conversation, some of which have been on the plan for like 2 years.
Do you think that having those companies or those people come to you, interested in your business, kind of acted as a way to sort of remind you that you have something of value, that what you're working on isn't a waste of time, and it sounds like it also reminded you that you have something good in your life. I mean, like, because it's definitely a lifestyle business from my perspective and what you just described. I mean, is that kind of what got you out of your funk?
Yeah, that and some very, very like heart-to-heart conversation with my wife. She is, I hate the term, she's my rock, because it feels very American sitcom and all that, but like she's always there to talk it through and to give me an understanding. And and yeah, so just being honest with her, because it's kind of hard to sort of like be honest and talk about your feelings and sort of like say, look, I'm struggling with this. And so, but to be able to have that conversation and go, do you know what? I just said to her one night, I was like, I don't know what to do. Everything I've tried is not working. What what do we do? And we had a long chat about it. It wasn't a fun chat, but we had a long chat, and we just we're in a better place for it.
What would you say to somebody who's listening right now, who maybe doesn't have the same support that you have with Heather and is also kind of struggling with the same thing being sort of this, I don't know, I would say self-talk, you know, where you keep telling yourself that I can't fix this and I don't have the growth that I wish I had. And I just feel like things aren't going anywhere. Which is, by the way, as both of us know, extremely common for any type of business like this. What would your advice be? I mean, you know, what would you recommend them to do? Whether it be what they say to themselves, whether it be getting out of the house, whether it be seeking help, you know, what would be your recommendation?
So before I answer that, I'm just going to go back to what you said about being a lifestyle business. And I did a conference talk about this last year, and you're right, because whenever you talk about companies, whenever you talk about software, there's this idea of hyper growth, and you want to build a unicorn, and you want to build the biggest company you can. And you know, I had years of growing up for that, and you know, you read the stories from like the Founders at Work book of people that were millionaires because they sold out in their mid 20s and stuff like that. And then you get to your mid 30s and you think, do you know what? I haven't done any of that. And then you sort of feel a little bit like a failure. And sort of, I sort of came up with this mantra of, I don't want to build a unicorn anymore. I want to build a horse. Because what I want, and it's a bit of a dad joke, because I want something with a stable income. And that's what I want. I'm very happy with my life right now. I've got an amazing wife. I've got an amazing kid. I've got a good house. I can pay off the mortgage at some point. I don't want to be a millionaire. You know, Heather and I wrote down a list of, if we sold the company, what would we buy? And it was like, we go on holiday. That was it. There was nothing. Our perspectives and our what we want to achieve in our lives are, it's a good exercise to do, to sit down and go, right, what do you actually want? What do you actually want to do in 5 years? What do you need? How many customers do you want? Because there's this expectation with software and SaaS that you're always smashing it. And, oh, you must be doing great. You must have loads of customers. And, yeah, outwardly, you're always like, yeah, we're doing great. But inwardly, there's always a little bit of shame that actually you're not doing as well as people think you are. And Little Warden, you'll be surprised at how few customers Little Warden has got compared to what everybody thinks. But we're happy with that. And we need to grow it. We know. But it's not like it's we're not talking sort of like Moz amount of customers. We're not talking that sort of customers. We're not even talking sort of Sitebulb customers. We're a very niche product, and we understand that. So if you are struggling with what you do, I would take a look. First of all, there are so many support networks out there. If this is a side project, there's an on-the-side Slack community with people that are doing all this, and it's a really, really good place. It's a Slack group to chat about any problems that you're having because other people are there. Speak to your family members. If you are doing this on your own, maybe consider a co-founder. They do shift the burden. They do shift the expectation for just you. And also reassess what you're expecting to get out of the company. You know, if you're aiming to sell this for £1 million, or sorry, you know, $6 million
I don't think the conversion rate is that right now. Go ahead.
And then that sort of thing. You know, you need to have a look at just what you're actually expected to achieve and what you're going to put into it. But just don't be afraid to ask for help. There's so many communities out there, even like the subreddits and things like that. You can be an honest. There's so many hacker news threads with from anonymous accounts that say, I'm in this situation, what can I do? There are books to read. One of my favorite books that sort of had a look at the way that, there's two things that I go to quite often. One is Delivering Happiness by Tony Hsieh, who died recently, but his book about the founding of Zappos and being customer centric, that left a mark on me about how that I could improve and have a look at it. And there's another talk, and it's on YouTube by, let me just have a quick look. It's by the guy who started Wufoo, and it's about delighting customers. And it's such a good talk about what they do and how they were delighting their customers and what they did to make sure that even something as boring as a form builder was a joy to use. And have a look at that, see what other people have done. I went on a bit, man, but...
No, I mean, that's real. I just think that's what everything you just said is wise, whether you believe it or not. And I think that for anybody who's listening, I think that's really just helpful advice. And I think that's a lovely way to end this conversation, you know, with a bit of hope. And for those who might be struggling with their business, you know, sort of where they can go to make things better. May not make the business better, but maybe will make your life better. So thank you for that.
But your business isn't going to get better if you aren't, you know, putting your effort into it, if you aren't in the right mindset. You know, I don't think I've done that much extra effort into the business since we had the conversation, but my productivity has increased so much. I'm putting as much time as I was in before, but I'm just getting a lot more out of it because I've got a better mindset and a better focus.
Well, and again, I think you're describing sort of the ideal approach to lifestyle business, which is because I separate the two. I mean, I think you're either building something to sell, or you're building something because it's what you want to do in your life at the moment. And so you know, I really connected with a lot of things you just said. You know, with CoilWolf, you know, CoilWolf for me is that it's an aspiration. It's something that I'm going to do at my own pace and what is, you know, reasonable for me to do it with all the other things I have going on in life. And I want to always enjoy doing it. And I want it to be done in the way that I want it to be done, if that makes any sense. You know, I mean, I don't want to be beholden to some investor. I don't want to build something that looks like what everybody's telling me I'm supposed to be, you know, the way it's supposed to be done. I want to do it my way, and it may fail, but damn it, I'm gonna have a good time doing it. You know, it'll be an expression of me. And if it's if it doesn't work, doesn't work. If it does, then fantastic. But it's my way to be creative. And it's my way to do something and hopefully make something that other people can get something out of.
Yep. That's what it is. You know, the amount of projects that I've started that have failed, but you just learn something every time. CoilWolf is a great project. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next.
Yeah, we'll see. No, I don't know. Hey, thank you for your time. I love talking with you. It is, as you know, it's been awful not having the conferences, not being able to physically actually be in the same room and hang out for hours. And so just really enjoyed this conversation. I think this is the longest I've ever talked to anybody doing this interview series. And I could probably talk forever more. But we both have things to do. I'm pretty sure we have stuff.
We do. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, man. Take care.